Hello and welcome to today's Community Standards Enforcement Report press call. There will be prepared remarks and a Q&A to follow. To ask a question after the prepared remarks conclude, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. Now, I'd like to turn the call over to Carolyn Glanville, who will kick this off. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, and thank you everyone for joining. You should have received embargoed materials ahead of this call with our Community Standards Enforcement Report, Widely Viewed Content Report, and the Oversight Board Quarterly Report. To kick off our call today, you'll hear from President, Global Affairs, Nick Clegg, with an update on our efforts related to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Following that, Vice President of Integrity, Guy Rosen, and Vice President of Content Policy, Monica Bickert, will speak on our Q4 2021 Community Standards Enforcement Report. We will then open the call up for questions. We are on the record, and this call is embargoed until 9:30 a.m. Pacific. With that, I'll kick it over to Nick to first talk about our efforts related to the invasion of Ukraine.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, everyone, for joining this call. We are here, of course, to share the findings of our latest Community Standards Enforcement Report. But I want to start by saying on my behalf, the behalf of the Meta team on this call and everyone at the company, that of course our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine at this time. At the heart of every war are people. And as military clashes and political rhetoric come to dominate the news, the devastation wrought on the lives of ordinary people can be overlooked. But throughout the last few days, we've seen glimpses of the people whose lives have been turned upside down by the conflict. The heartbreak of families separated, the anxiety of people huddled on subway platforms, and the bravery and defiance of Ukrainians, young and old, defending their communities. And we've been able to catch these glimpses in large part because, especially in times of crisis, people turn to social media to make their voices heard, to protest, to organize, and to share what's happening with their communities and the wider world. And it has been humbling to witness ordinary Ukrainians and Russians using our platforms to shine a light on what's happening. We've also seen how powerful a tool social media has been for President Zelensky to speak directly to people around the world, including appealing to Russian people in their own language in an effort to stop the war. And social media allows people from outside Ukraine to reach out to those inside the country. 10% of people in Europe and 4% globally now have a Facebook friend in Ukraine. We've seen a huge outpouring of generosity and solidarity all over the world. So far, people have raised more than $50 million in the last 5 days on Facebook and Instagram alone to support humanitarian efforts. And more than 8 million people have added the Ukrainian flag frame to their profile picture on Facebook. Since the war began, people are using Facebook groups to help those in need. For instance, a Polish group of over 300,000 members are offering those impacted to be picked up at the border along with housing, clothing, and medication. A group of Romanian volunteers and donors has over 200,000 members offering and coordinating transportation and accommodation for refugees. And groups across Europe are formed to offer care and housing for pets of anyone in Ukraine. Over the past several days, our priority has been to ensure that people are able to continue using our apps and services safely and securely. We want to prevent the abuse of our platforms by tackling misinformation and other violating content, and taking down malicious networks of accounts that engage in what we call coordinated inauthentic behavior. Our priorities throughout are threefold. First, we continue to work to make sure our services are available for people in the middle of this crisis. That is why we think it's important to make sure our services operate in Russia, despite the Russian government's attempts to throttle our services. Prominent Russian creators and influencers, activists and musicians are using Facebook and Instagram to access information and speak out against the invasion. We want them to continue to be able to do so. And we want people in Russia to continue to be able to hear from President Zelensky and others in Ukraine. We've rolled out safety features for our users in Ukraine and Russia to help protect them from being targeted, including the ability for people to lock their Facebook profile, removing the ability to view and search friends lists with more tools on Messenger. We've made encrypted one-to-one chats available on Instagram for all adults in Ukraine and Russia. We'll also show notifications at the top of people's direct message inboxes to let them know they can switch to an encrypted conversation if they want to. End-to-end encrypted chats are already available, of course, as an optional messenger and by default on WhatsApp. Second, we're a company, not a government, so we are working closely with governments and responding to their requests to combat disinformation and harmful propaganda. We've established a special operations center staffed by experts from across the company, including native Russian and Ukrainian speakers, who are monitoring the platform around the clock, allowing us to respond to issues in real time. At the request of the government of Ukraine and of governments in the European Union, we have restricted access to Russia Today and Sputnik in Ukraine and the EU. We have also expanded our third-party fact-checking capacity in Russian and Ukrainian and are providing more context and transparency around the content shared by the Russian state-controlled media outlets, prohibiting ads from the Russian state media and demonetizing their accounts. I can also confirm we are demoting content from Facebook pages and Instagram accounts from Russian state-controlled media outlets, and we are making them harder to find across our platforms. We have also begun to demote posts that contain links to Russian state-controlled media websites on Facebook. Over the next few days, we will label these links and provide more information to people before they share them or click on them to let them know that they lead to state-controlled media websites. We plan on putting similar measures in place on Instagram. These are just some of the measures we've taken over the last few days. You can find a more exhaustive list in our newsroom, which we aim to keep updated regularly as things move on. Events are, of course, fast moving, and our teams remain on high alert to respond quickly and decisively. The events of recent days give even greater resonance to the report we're here to discuss today. We've been publishing these community standards enforcement reports regularly since May 2018, both to demonstrate the seriousness with which we take protecting against abuses of our platforms and the need to tackle hate speech and other content that violates our rules, and to be transparent about the progress we're making. But however much progress we make, there will always remain more to be done to improve our systems and respond to challenges that are constantly evolving. And with that, I'll hand over to Guy.
Thank you, Nick. Hi, everyone. I'm Guy Rosen. I'm VP of Integrity here at Meta, leading the product and engineering teams that work on safety and security. And so today we're publishing our quarterly community standards enforcement report. Today's report covers the fourth quarter of 2021, and it provides metrics on how we enforce our policies from October through December of last year across Facebook and Instagram. To build on what Nick just said there, we've made a lot of progress, but even with it, there will always be examples of things we miss. And with the scale of our enforcement, there will be examples of things we take down by mistake. There is no perfect in this kind of work. We believe that progress on these efforts should be evaluated through this report, which tracks the same metrics we operate on internally. Measuring progress on keeping prevalence of violating content down while minimizing mistakes on the content that we remove. Our report today covers 14 policy areas on Facebook, 12 on Instagram, and it's our quarterly touchstone to keep you updated on our work in this space. We're also releasing the third edition of the widely viewed content report today, which provides an overview of the most widely viewed content on Facebook newsfeed. And we're publishing the Oversight Board quarterly update, both of them also covering Q4 of 2021. Let's first talk about this quarter's community standards enforcement report. Since we started reporting on prevalence across most of our policy areas, we have seen stable or declining prevalence. This trend continues in this Q4 report, with prevalence either remaining consistent or decreasing in almost all the policy areas that we are reporting on. This means that the vast majority of the content that people see on our platforms is not in violation of our policies. For example, hate speech prevalence on Facebook decreased for four quarters in a row and remained consistent over the last quarter, slightly lower than Q3, coming in at 0.02 to 0.03%. Now, in addition to prevalence, an important focus area in our work, is our efforts to improve accuracy, prevent mistakes, give people ways to tell us when we get things wrong. Now, in some areas, we may see content action numbers decrease as we improve the accuracy of our systems. Another way we do this is by improving the transparency that people have into the actions we take. We've had a page called Account Status on Facebook for a while where people can see content that we've removed and why, and they can tell us if they think we got it wrong. Last fall, we launched the same account status tool on Instagram as well. And we know this kind of transparency is really important because it helps people better understand our policies and it helps our systems by giving us indications when we've gotten things wrong. And we can see this reflected in today's report with some of the restore numbers up on Instagram across several policy areas. This kind of feedback loop is a really important part of how we improve our systems to meet people's expectations. Finally, a quick update on the independent assessment that we've been undergoing. In 2020, folks may remember we committed to an audit so that people can verify the accuracy of the metrics that we share in these reports. As you know, we selected EY to conduct this assessment. It will cover the community standards enforcement report metrics from the fourth quarter of 2021. So it's the report that we're sharing today. And we expect the results of this process to be shared in the coming months. With that, I'll turn it over to Monica.
Thanks, Guy, and hello, everyone. And thanks for joining us today. I'm Monica Bickert, our VP of Content Policy at Meta. I lead the team that writes our policies on what content is and is not allowed on our platforms. This is an international team that works every day in partnership with local experts and organizations to identify how we can best manage our policies to keep up with new shifts in global dynamics. Today, I want to cover four things. First, a change in our bullying and harassment enforcement, then two policy enforcement transparency updates, and finally, our latest oversight board update. So first on the enforcement piece, last quarter, we reported for the first time on the prevalence of bullying and harassment. This quarter, we saw a reduction in prevalence in that area, bullying and harassment content on Facebook. This reduction can be attributed largely to a change in our enforcement that makes exceptions for content that uses words that could be offensive in some contexts, but uses those words instead as a term of endearment or as a joking way between friends. This change is designed to stop us from removing content where there's no actual harassment, but rather expressions of empathy, friendship, or love. This week, we've also updated the misinformation section to our community standards by consolidating all the different aspects of our misinfo policy into one location. So none of our substantive policies have changed. This new section is just taking our existing policies, putting them in one place so that they're easier to access and easier to understand in context. And I would note also that this is in part a response to the oversight board's advice that we do so. You can find that new section in our community standards by visiting transparency.fb.com. Next up, I want to highlight that starting this May, Meta will begin participating in Lumen, an independent research project that's hosted by Harvard's Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society. This project enables researchers to study content takedown requests from governments and private actors concerning online content. Now, as you all know, for many years, we've published biannual transparency reports, which include the volume of content restrictions we make when content is reported as violating local law but doesn't go against our community standards. Participating in Lumen is an additional way of bringing added visibility to those requests. And finally, I want to touch on the oversight board. Today, we're releasing our third update about our work supporting the board and implementing their recommendations. This update details cases that Meta referred to the board and updates on our responses to the recommendations that the board has made. To date, the board has made over 100 recommendations, and we've committed to implementing or have already implemented a majority of them. Moving forward, we will continue to provide updates on our implementation of the board's recommendations, and we welcome their continued work to help us improve our policies and processes. Thanks again for joining the call. With that, I will turn it over to the operator for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from Alex Heath with The Verge. Please proceed.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for doing this call. I wanted to ask about the recommendations change that you said at the top of the call you made to Russian state-backed media. Can you elaborate a little bit on where that is taking place? Is that just in the EU? Is that everywhere? Is it inside Russia? And then also if you could give us an update on the effects that you're seeing of the Russian government's internet slowdown on your services and any impact that's had. Thanks.
This is Nathaniel Gleischer. I work on our, I lead our security policy work across the country and across the company. As Nick mentioned, we've taken a number of different steps on Russian state media. A couple of things just to be explicit here. We have blocked them from advertising or monetizing around the world. We are also demoting content from Russian state media wherever it appears anywhere in the world. As always, we have labeled a number of Russian state media entities, and our teams are continuing to investigate and identify additional Russian state media entities that we are adding labels to as time passes. In addition, in response to specific requests from the Ukrainian government and the government in the EU, we have blocked particular Russian state media entities from messaging into those regions entirely. And then an additional point that Nick mentioned earlier on the call is that we have also begun to demote posts with the links to Russian state-controlled media websites on Facebook. In the days ahead, we're going to label those links so that in addition to seeing labels on the Facebook pages and content from the Facebook pages of these entities, people also see labels and have context on links to their websites before clicking on them or sharing them. We'll also be taking these steps on Instagram going forward as well. So that will be around the world.
And on the, Alex, on your question about the effects of the throttling in Russia, yeah, we've seen the effects of that since February the 25th, when the government of Russia announced restrictions on our services. And we see the effect most particularly on sort of video and other multimedia content. And we're seeing that showing up on both Facebook and Instagram in a slightly different sort of rates, but the degradation of the service is definitely discernible.
And I should say we've also removed Russian state media from recommendation services, so they will also not be recommended to users across the platforms. Next question.
Our next question comes from Stephen Levy with Wired. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks all for doing this. I have a question for Nick. It's almost like a policy thing. And then just another quick one question about the report. Can you talk, Nick, a little bit about how Facebook thinks about participating in, you know, what seems like a pretty wide movement against a universally agreed upon, you know, terrible action by a state actor, but what's the proper role for a platform during a war like this? And, you know, in terms of taking sides, is it something where you interpret your policies to fit that? You follow these of governments? You know, just your thoughts along that line. And then the other quick question is, in looking at the report, the most viewed page in the quarter was something that was removed by Facebook for violating community standards. Could someone tell me what that was?
Yeah, on the first theme, as I sort of tried to elaborate in my opening remarks, we feel that our, you know, priorities are first to continue to make our services available for people to use as safely and securely as possible, most especially in Russia and Ukraine. And that's where we focused, candidly, most of our efforts. But in terms of the global response, not only ourselves, but Google, TikTok, Microsoft has removed RT and Sputnik from its app store. The tech sector as a whole, I suppose, has been responsive, not least in the face of numerous demands that have been made of us on exactly that by governments and regulators in the European Union and in Ukraine. We're a company, we're a private sector company, we're not a government. We obviously have to respond to these requests as thoughtfully as we can, but we're also aware that we're in a completely unprecedented situation, and this is a highly exceptional and tragic state of affairs, which is why not only ourselves, but many others in the tech sector are taking these pretty exceptional measures at this time. But you're right to highlight the fact that, you know, we are a private sector company which runs apps and services which so happen to be relied upon by millions of people in Russia and Ukraine at a moment of great distress and military conflict. And also we're having demands made of us by, you know, governments in numerous different jurisdictions. That is quite a difficult balancing trick for us to strike, but we try and do so with the utmost transparency. We try and explain our reasons, and that's why we keep the newsroom updated as we do, and why we'll continue to make calls like this so that you understand what actions we're taking and the reasons we're taking them.
And this is Guy. I can jump in on the second part of your question. We do have some pages or posts in the widely viewed content report that were removed for violating policies. This could include things like personal information based, inauthentic behavior, phishing, or harassment. To honor our user data deletion policy, we unfortunately can't share any identifying information about the content that was removed.
Our next question comes from Kurt Wagner with Bloomberg. Please proceed.
Hey, yeah, thanks for taking the question. I'm wondering, Nick, I'm curious if you've been in contact with President Zelensky or anybody, you know, on the ground in Ukraine and what those conversations have been like. Is that a line of communication that's open at the moment to anyone at Meta?
Yeah, we've received emails, and we've been corresponding with the government by email, and much of that, well, pretty all of it has been avowed by us, as you will have seen that we took action against a number of entities and pages in Ukraine at the request of the Ukrainian government. We've been, you know, open about that. We've also explained, for what it's worth, Kurt, that where demands have emanated from some senior members of the Ukrainian government that we should somehow disable our services altogether inside Russia, we have explained why we don't agree with that. We think it is essential, for as long as this can continue, that ordinary Russians can use our services to express themselves, to organize, to protest, and to reach out to family and friends and the wider community. So yeah, we have done that. And of course, we're also in constant contact with security partners and civil society organizations within Ukraine and around the world. And we've shared information with our industry and government partners to, you know, to explain how we counter the threats that we've identified.
Our next question comes from AZ Leposky with Protocol. Please proceed.
Thanks for taking my question. So, Nick, you know, you mentioned that this is an unprecedented scenario, but obviously Facebook has, you know, faced conflict in other regions, and you've done a lot of introspection about Facebook's role in Myanmar. Is that a framework you're able to apply to these decisions, or do you find yourself in a position of really having to invent these new policies and procedures as the situation unfolds?
No, I think in many ways, Izzy, you're right to say that, unfortunately, we've had to develop muscles as a company to respond to violence and military conflict on numerous occasions. And as you and others have quite rightly documented, that's been a learning process for the company. I think we're in a, I'm hesitant to say better position. It's not the right sort of way to talk about this, perhaps. But we are definitely drawing on experiences and deploying product innovations and enforcing policies which have developed over time in the face of the experience we've had of seeing our services used and, of course, on occasion abused at times of distress and violence and conflict. So yes, I think that is definitely the case. We're not, in other words, I think in answer to your question, whilst this does feel in many ways somewhat atypical just because of the sort of the enormity of the global response, which is quite unusual, I think many of our reflexes are ones that we have largely developed before. But I'm keen for Guy, Nathaniel, Monica to jump in there if they've got anything to add.
I think you covered it, Nick. Next question.
Our next question comes from Nando Castellanin with NOS. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking the question. I have two questions, if I may. The first is you have been restricting RT and Sputnik in the EU and the Ukraine on request. I was wondering, are there talks to broaden this, maybe make it worldwide for the time being, also focused on Russia? And the second thing I'm wondering, do you fear more repercussions in Russia? For example, do you prepare to leave the country or your employees to leave the country because of maybe extra harassment from the Russian government? Thank you.
Sure, I can take that. Thanks for the question. We're continuing to monitor requests from other governments as they come in around the world and respond to them as appropriate. And we're certainly watching what's happening in Russia and taking every step possible to keep people safe within the country and to do everything we can to keep our services available within the country so people can use them to learn accurate information about what's happening with the war, to organize protests, and to speak their mind as much as possible.
Our next question comes from Marcus Schuller with ARD. Please proceed.
Thank you for taking my question. Question for Nick. Nick, why could you elaborate a little bit on why is it so difficult for a company like Meta operating out of a democratic country to clearly condemn the actions of the Russian government? The few in the Western world, in the whole world, except maybe China or India, is that this is a war against a much smaller country. It's an invasion. Why is it so difficult for a company like yours to say, hey, there's a red line that has overstepped and we're just delete the accounts of these propaganda machines that work for the Russian government? Thank you.
I don't think there's any difficulty in condemning, and I sort of feel we have done so, but we're a company. We're not a government, so we don't sit around, you know, at the table in the United Nations issuing sort of government-style condemnations. We are, our priority is to try and keep our services available and safe and secure for the millions of people who use our services in Russia and Ukraine at this time. And we have taken, as we explained earlier, unprecedented action against state-controlled media entities controlled by the Russian government. We're doing so on a scale never done before, as are other major tech players, and we're doing so in response to overtures and requests and demands from governments and regulators in Ukraine and across the European Union. But remember, at the end of the day, the most powerful antidote to propaganda is not only restricting its circulation, but circulating the answers to it. And that is why we always want to strike the right balance to allow the flow of counter speech to continue on our services where we are in a position to influence that. In answer to the earlier question, I don't know what the Russian authorities are going to do to our services. They're already throttling them and they may go further. That's not in our control. But we passionately believe as a company. That's what our company is based on. Our whole ethos is that we provide services which are free to use because they're paid for by advertising for millions, billions of ordinary people around the world to express themselves when they want, how they want, where they want, obviously within the constraints of the law and our own community standards. And that in the long run, in our view, and I think history and experience suggest that that is the case, in the long run, the thing that really undermines propaganda is counter speech. You can, of course, suppress, restrict, block accounts, and we do all of that. And we're very transparent about how doing that. But I do think at a moment of heightened conflict, it is always important to remember that it is free expression, that in the end, we should be seeking to help win out more than anything else.
Our next question comes from Mark Scott with Politico. Please proceed.
Good morning. Thanks for doing this. Just following up on one of the previous questions for Nick in particular, have you received requests from other governments outside of the EU and Ukraine to block or geo-block the Russian state media outlets? And second of all, I mean, you say counter speech and free speech is the way to block and sort of win against propaganda coming from the Russian government, but are there any nuclear options on the table in terms of to delisting and removing these accounts from the platforms? Thank you.
Well, obviously, this is such an unprecedented and horrifying set of events, Mark. I really can't predict to you how they're going to unfold, yet alone how we are going to have to adapt to and respond to them. So I don't want to pretend that things are sort of off the table. We all feel, I think, the whole world feels we're entering into new territory here. So, of course, we'll keep an open mind. But we will continue along the sort of tram lines, all other things being equal, that we've set out to you today. I think we have received some requests from other governments outside the European Union. I'm reluctant, Mark, to give you a running tally because literally things change minute by minute, and I'm sure that our teams in other parts of the world are responding to some of those requests right now. But I can certainly confirm that we have received some similar requests outside the European Union.
Our next question comes from Queenie Wong with CNET. Please proceed.
Hi, this question is for Nick. So you mentioned earlier on in this press call that Russia had restricted your services and the effects were seen particularly on video and other multimedia content, and the degradation of the service is definitely discernible. Those were your words. Can you share more details about in what ways have they restricted your services in Russia, and in terms of like the demotion of Russian state-controlled media content on Facebook and Instagram, and you know, also with sharing links, does that also apply to your messaging app WhatsApp?
I mean, on the first, I'll let Nathaniel Monaco come in on the second. On the first, Queen, I can't give you too much detail because, you know, the throttling happens, if you like, how can I put it, at the back end, I guess, by the, you know, the regulators intervening with the ISPs and the technology of that is something that we can speculate on, but it's not our proprietary technology. It's the infrastructure in Russia, which has been deployed to throttle it. So I can describe to you where we're seeing the effect, which is greatest in the way that I described, particularly on video and multimedia formats. It also, of course, leads just to significant delays. And the effect is not identical on Facebook and Instagram either. And it will vary. It will vary in place and in time. And so the throttling may be more extreme by the end of the day. We just don't know. But we'll try and share as much information going forward as we reasonably can.
On the second piece of the question, the downranking and other steps we're taking apply most primarily to Facebook, and we're continuing to roll them out on Instagram as well. WhatsApp is a somewhat different platform, among other things. It's an end-to-end encrypted platform, so we don't have access to the content of these messages. We'll be continuing to monitor the situation and assess the way people are using the platforms. I think, as Nick has said, the situation on the ground is changing by the hour, so we'll continue to evolve our approach as the situation shifts. Next question.
Our last question comes from Mozadig Badar with CBS News. Please proceed.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I know you've received requests from governments outside of the EU to consider banning Russian state-owned media. I know you're demonetizing their accounts here in the U.S. I'd like to know if you're considering a request from the U.S. government specifically to block RT and Sputnik, another Russian state-owned media firm, from Facebook for all users here in America. So have you gotten such a request from the U.S. government?
No, I'm not aware. I'm not aware that we have.
Thank you.
Next question. We've probably got time for one more.
Next question comes from Sheila Dang with Reuters. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I wanted to ask about the new Russian law that the communications regulator said that they would start enforcing today, which requires tech companies to have an office in Russia and be registered with the regulator. Can you talk about any steps that Meta has taken to comply with those new laws, or does it not intend to comply?
Yes, we were obviously in intensive discussions with the Russian regulator on that. I think they're calling it the localization law, prior to the eruption of the violence that is now occurring in Ukraine. And of course, we sought to take steps to comply with aspects of the law where we feel we can, in sort of good conscience, do so. We have been in protracted discussions with the regulator about some of the provisions which we feel are disproportionate and which we struggle to sort of fully understand or plan to fully put into effect. And those discussions were ongoing right until the point that the invasion in Ukraine occurred. And so for the rest, it really will be for the Russian regulator to, you know, confirm to you what steps they want to take. Both with regard to Meta, but also to the other large non-Russian tech companies that operate within Russia. But it was definitely part of an ongoing and hitherto unresolved process in our discussions with the regulator.
We'll turn it over to the operator.
That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you all so much. And just a reminder, the embargoed materials sent earlier today lifts at 9:30 Pacific time. If you have any additional questions, please reach out to the press at email alias. Thank you.